WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. The Illinois primary is next Tuesday, and the presidential candidates are trying to line up votes in Chicago. For years, Chicago politics was synonymous with machine politics. My guest Jane Byrne knew the machine from the inside. Mayor Daley made her a commissioner. But after his death, she ran for mayor against the machine and won. Some say when she was in office, she sold out to the party bosses. She lost her re-election bid in the Democratic primary to Harold Washington, who became the city's first black mayor. Byrne has written a new book called My Chicago. She got involved in politics in 1960, working on John Kennedy's presidential campaign. After Kennedy's death, she was introduced to Mayor Daley. He invited her to his office. When she got there, it was clear Daley was bothered by the fact that she worked for Kennedy instead of working for the Daley machine.
There was an antipathy which I think may have existed in many of the machine cities of that day. Politics and the leader, like the chairman of the party, which is what Mayor Daley was, of Cook County, they don't like to see outside independent groups. They don't like to see competition in any way about the vote getting. They want to be the all power. They want their machine to be the all power deliverer. And it was Joe Kennedy that, in the course of the campaign, met with Mayor Daley. He absolutely refused to have it at this Kennedy headquarters in Chicago. And Joe Kennedy convinced him that, you know, it would look terrible. They had one in New York, they had one in Boston, Philadelphia, San Francisco, and how bad would it look, not to have one in Chicago, and that it would look like his son, John, was controlled by the machine. So ultimately, Mayor Daley gave in, but he never got to like the fact that there was this headquarters over on Michigan Avenue. And so when he met with me, that first question out of his mouth was, why did you go to them and not us? And again, I would repeat, I was, in my mid-20s, and I was not a household name, as people looking all over to get this Jane Byrne to help out. And so I listened to him, and I said, well, they asked, and I had the opportunity to do it. And then he went into a tirade. What did they do for you? And we take care of our people, and they didn't take care of you. And so finally he was irritating me. I mean, I didn't mean to be irritated, but he kept asking me, what did I get? And so finally I said, I came to the wrong place. I should not be here. And he looked at me, and I said, I'll tell you what I got out of it. I worked to get I wanted to see John Kennedy president of the United States. I worked to help him attain that. If I got him one vote, I got out of it what I wanted to get out of it. John Kennedy went to the White House. And he just looked at me, and I said, but you, it's clear to me, you were in it for the spoils of victory. What could you get out of it? You were not in it for the man himself. You didn't care. And with that, I was really getting angry, and I rose. I stood up, and I said, this is stupid anyway. I mean, the man is dead. It seemed to me very stupid to be sitting there discussing something while the president was dead by about 6 weeks. So with that, his chair went back and bumped the wall. It was, on rollers. And he leaned down, and his head was beneath his desk. Now I didn't know what he was doing. And he said, my shoelace is untied. So I thought, okay, but I'm still standing. I'm ready to leave. And when he came back up, he turned his head towards the wall, like he wasn't going to look at me. And I really thought, I will never come back here. And all of a sudden, I saw coming down his face tears. And I said, oh, you did like the man, or you were for the man. And he said, sit down, just like that. So I, guardedly sat down again. And then we went into this, are you above the Democratic machine? I said, I don't even know it. And then we had our conversation, which ultimately, before I left, he turned to me, and this was not said in a braggish way. He said to me, the Congress, House of Representatives, possible. Senate, possible, not probable. So I was like, uh-huh. And with that, he said, stop in once a month. And I walked out the door, and I'm thinking to myself, I didn't go in there asking to be a member of the House. I didn't go in there. I just went in there because I was invited. This whole thing was beyond anything I had ever experienced in my young years. And I started towards the elevators, and I thought, that's it. I'll never walk in the door of 507 again. That's the mayor's office.
Daley appointed you commissioner of the Department of Consumer Sales, Weights, and Measures, making you the first woman commissioner in any major city. Mm-hmm. And then he explained that you owed your loyalty directly to him and you had to answer directly to him. There must have been times when you had to do something for Daley or for the machine that you found distasteful, but you knew you had to do.
No. I'll tell you, as a commissioner, he did not mix pot. He's a man that they used to say he wore two hats. As a commissioner, you were government. Later on, I became co-chairman of the Democratic Party of Cook County, which was joint with him, and that was political. But surprisingly enough, even though I had an office in City Hall, commissioner's office, on the 8th floor, and Mayor Daley was on the 5th, I also had to have an office in the Democratic headquarters directly across the street, and that was for politics. And there was always this separation between government and politics. And I liked that about him. That is not what happened after he died, and I had a disagreement with the next mayor, who, in my judgment, was mixing politics with government. And so I went public on that because I wouldn't do it, and I wasn't used to doing it. And it was quite a stormy going public, and it went on for about a week, and ultimately, I couldn't tell you if it was that I resigned or that mayor finally fired me. You had no choice. I made a public attack on corruption.
In 1975, when Daley was running for re-election, mm-hmm. he basically asked you to set up an organization that would defeat his own machine.
Correct.
Would you
that's
explain
right.
the logic behind that?
Yeah, that's correct. He felt that the members, the aldermen, particularly along the lakefront, the so-called machine aldermen, had lost touch with the people. And independents who were coming from the community were beating machine candidates. What the mayor wanted to do was set up his own, I guess you'd call it organization, of anti-machine candidates to run against his own machine so that the new breed of young aldermen or young neighborhood activists would be basically his.
My guest is former Chicago Mayor Jane Byrne. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Jane Byrne, former mayor of Chicago and author of a new book called My Chicago. You know, some people have come to think of politics as such a corrupting game they can't imagine why anyone would want to play. Tell me something you really liked about being in politics.
The one thing that is, I think, rewarding to anybody that's in politics or government and that does do a good job is that you can see the results of you can actually see the results of what it is you're doing. It doesn't have to be a big thing. You can reach out sometimes. And as an example, when I was mayor, I lived in a housing project, which was the most notorious in Chicago for death and shootings and gangs. And I moved in there. And we cleaned it up and we cleaned it out, and we had very good results. Well, it was very nice to me at night when children would come and knock on my door. And you'd get to talk to them, and you'd know their fears, and you knew the conditions in which they were living. And then you saw sort of the blossoming when they were no longer afraid to go outside, and when the playgrounds got, you know, filled with kids again, and when kids were back on basketball courts where they had been too frightened to go out. The mothers wouldn't even let them go out because of the crossfire of the gangs. And that was a very good feeling. And politics is not all corrupt, and politics is not all dirty. I think there's a cynicism out there today, and I think it's perhaps justified, but I don't ultimately blame it only on the politician. I blame it on the way we're conducting politics in this country and locally, and that is all these consultants and polls being taken in advance of a position, statements being made by some political consulting company because the poll told you to say this that you can't possibly live up to, and then you get in the job and the people feel you let them down. The 30-second soundbite, the packaged candidate, all of that is, to me, where the corruption is.
You know, I appreciate what you're saying about the rewards of being in politics. On the other hand, your motives are always questioned when you're in politics.
Sure.
For instance, the Cabrini Green example, when you mm-hmm. moved into the housing project for 3 weeks.
Mm-hmm. No, it was six.
Well, okay, sorry. Mm-hmm. A lot of people said it was purely for opportunistic reasons, you know, mm-hmm. that you were there for the publicity, you were there to make it seem as if you were doing something really special for
the community. Can I interrupt you?
Yeah.
That was not said when I moved in there. Mm-hmm. And there was polling taken by two of the networks in Chicago when I made the decision that I would move in there. And 80% of the public, both black, brown, and white, all black, brown, and white, all said it's a great idea. If she can stop the deaths and stop the killing, it's a great idea. The cynicism did not begin for 2 years. And then during the height of a political campaign, which you might expect, then it became, she only did that for publicity. But at the time that it was done, which was 2 years prior to the reelection campaign, it made me feel good to know that a city that had been charged earlier and historically with being very racial and divided, that 82% is what it was, percent of the city supported the move into Cabrini and said, if she can help them, you know, go get them. And so it was more a political maneuver to cast a shadow on it than the actuality at the time that it was done.
I have to ask you about being a woman in politics. Mm-hmm. Does the nickname Hot Flash Jane ring a bell?
No, but certainly names that, that would be too polite, you know.
Oh, like, I've read that one.
Yeah, you know, the B word, the, so many of them. That
The M word, menopausal?
Yeah, right. Let me say this to any young woman that might be listening. You have to go into it knowing that that's the way it is going to be. And it's going to be that way for a long time. I don't know if in the business world, many tell me it's the same way. There is just this feeling of not being comfortable, not caring to see, you know, I suppose man to man, it's the same way. If a man gets the job, A, if A gets the job, B doesn't get the job. But there is a resentment out there that women come along and maybe do a better job and maybe, you know, a much better job. Women can make a big difference, but they certainly should know that, you know, politics itself can be a very, very brutal game, and there's no softness in it just because you're a woman. In fact, it's tougher.
You had Chicago police as your guards when mm-hmm. you were in office. Were you the first woman who they had to protect?
No, they were there for Mayor Daley and Mayor Bilandic, and it was just part of the office of mayor.
The first woman, I said. The first
yes,
woman.
Yes, yes, right.
Do you think that they did anything different for you than they did for the men?
No, but they told me that they could see the difference. And, you know, when you're talking to Chicago policemen, they're a paramilitary. They want to be. They have prided themselves for many years on being, you know, pretty tough, strong, macho. And they never would believe that they could be sexist. And they never would have believed that there was so much sexism out there. And it would be very hard for them, being of their ilk, to even see it or recognize it. And yet they, too, said that they just couldn't believe the difference. They'd walk into the room. You know, they had been there with Daley. They'd been there with Bilandic. And there was a coming forward, a camaraderie, you know, say a board meeting, say maybe one of the major corporations, board meeting and lunch. And but they said the holding back begins immediately. Just immediately. And they couldn't believe that. And it's there, you know. It's a very sensitive thing out there. I mean, those that are involved in it don't even know it. And those that are feeling it, they're feeling it.
Do you plan to return to politics?
Well, this has been a very good time for me to rethink Chicago, where it's going, watching all the politics that's going on around me. And someday I think I will return to politics, yes. This has been educational for me. It's been time off after about 17, 18 years in the fray. I started very young. And I'll just watch. And when I see something that I think I can do better on, sure, I'll get back in.
Jane Byrne has written a new book called My Chicago.